Well, good morning. For Thursday, July 16th, this is the BrianMadden.com podcast, and I'm Jack Madden. Thank you very much for joining us today. With me today, I also have Gabe Knuth from Omaha, Nebraska. Hello, Gabe.
Hi, Jack.
And also with us today, we have our guests from VMware. We have Noah Wasmer live from the AirWatch headquarters in Atlanta, Georgia. Hi, Noah.
Hey, Jack and Gabe.
And also on the line, we have Ashish Jain from VMware at the VMware Palo Alto office.
Hey, guys.
So, welcome, everybody. This is a podcast that I've been looking forward to having for a long time. Because Noah, it seems like, you know, every time we see each other at a conference, it's just like, hey, there's so much stuff that we just have to talk about so much. And we keep on saying that we have to come on the show and have a good conversation or argument, you know, depending on how strong our opinions get. So thank you for finally being able to come on the show today.
You bet. You bet. I hope this is a first of many. You know, we're obviously a huge fans of BrianMadden.com, and, you know, this is the place we go to learn from the field. And so thanks for having us, and hopefully we can do more of these.
Yeah. Thanks. Yeah, definitely. But today, so the reason today that that brought up this podcast today is we want to learn more from you, because of course last month, has it been a whole month now since that VMware event that was here in San Francisco, but anyway, last month VMware had this event here in San Francisco where they announced a few different new initiatives. They talked a bit about the app configuration for enterprise program and some things like that. But one of the big announcements was this new product, VMware Identity Manager. And this is in particular interesting because, of course, identity and access management and SSO they're, of course, not new concepts and have been around for years. And but now that we're in this modern EMM era, we have let's just say it's definitely a hot topic in this space among not only VMware but among many other companies. Microsoft is talking a lot about Azure AD in the enterprise mobility suite. We have identity access management vendors like Centrify that have been combining the two for a while. And last fall, we had Okta announce their combining MDM into identity and access management. So we're at a time where, of course, EMM isn't new and identity and access management isn't new, but we're having lots of big conversations about combining the two. Now, this is also interesting, of course, to have you, Noah, on, because we've talked to you for years about Project Horizon, which has always had some identity and access management components. So basically, what I wanted to find out is, like, over the last 5 years with Project Horizon, like, what was there, what's new now, like, where all the integrations are between VMware Identity Manager and AirWatch. And so that's just like a million questions. So I don't even know where we should begin.
Right. Let me see if we can unpack that a bit. And I think that's a great lead in. You know, obviously, it is, I think, Jack, just even the whole point of your coming into Brian Madden, this idea of mobility is starting to become front and center, right? We're starting to see this idea that, you know, mobility isn't just iOS and Android anymore. It's becoming Windows part of that game. And it's also this, you know, everybody is universally saying it's about a mobile cloud era. And traditionally, you know, I think we've both, you know, lived in this, you know, last two decades of computing where, you know, it's been Active Directory and on-premise, you know, technologies and on-premise app delivery with a smattering of, you know, I'm starting to embrace Salesforce and Workday and Box and some of the cloud services. But now we're really seeing, you know, front and center enterprise app development becoming native mobile apps, right? That there's true native mobile apps that are becoming part of people's everyday work lives, right? Whether that's whether that's the sales people, it's the sales forces, and you know, everybody's using Concur to do their expenses, and you know, there's becoming critical IP in these different apps. And you know, VMware has been investing in identity for the last 5 years, and it's a hard technology, right? Very few people have the depth of skill set oftentimes inside of large enterprises to really figure out all of the acronyms that there are out there, right? How does this work with an identity provider, and what does a secure token service mean, and how do I, you know, federate my different applications? And ultimately, what we want to do is provide a way for users to use the apps that they love in the business space, but have security, right? That's it. It's as simple as that. And where the gap has been is around how do we do that in a simple way, but also in a way that users can use the app successfully?
Right. Well, I was even going to I was going to unpack what you said a little bit, because I don't know if you happened to notice or anybody else heard earlier this week and last week, Brian and I had a series of two podcasts in a row where we were talking about this whole new era and transitioning from the Windows desktop and Windows application era into this whole new world. And one of the interesting conversations, one of the interesting parts of that conversation that we had is sort of there were a few different parts. Like, of course, this goes for enterprise mobility management too. And actually, our conversation was mostly centered around enterprise mobility management. And it was all about, when do we transition from obviously some organizations, you know, they might be doing EMM because like they just have the regulatory requirements to keep their devices safe no matter what. But then there are lots of other organizations that, you know, they're going, yeah, they have a few mobile apps, but maybe it's just happening in a more ad hoc way. And so at some point, there's a point where you can get by without EMM or without having even get by without SSO or get by without some more comprehensive identity and access management for your cloud apps. And then there's like an intermediate point where like it's okay, it's nice to have. You know, at our company, we have like each of our users probably average 3, 4, 5 cloud apps that they access. And like one of them, okay, like finally we just got one or two of them set up with ADFS so we can do single sign-on into them. But then we talked like the new future era, when there's so many mobile apps flying around and so many services flying around, that like this EMM and identity access management, and this is just the way that we do end user computing in the future.
It's spot on. And I think one of the things that you're seeing right now today, again, with, you know, on the cusp of Windows 10 launch, and you know, where you see Microsoft starting to say, you know, that there are new unique ways that you can join my workplace, right? Join my school, and just by a simple authentication, you get a set of apps deployed, right? With strong identity, you know, that you just tap on it, it launches, it's pre-configured, and you get into the service. This is where every major modern platform, whether it's OS 10 Yosemite, iOS, Android, or now Windows, they're all moving this path. And it's a way that I think is really, for the first time, and Ashish, you know, can talk to this in more detail, we really have both a win for the consumer and a win for the business, right? Where it's easier for the user. They don't have to know their username and password. They don't have to, you know, worry about what are all the config settings, what server, what port number, et cetera. And at the same time, you know, the enterprise can now say that they know that the user's using this app on a trusted device, whether it's Windows, iOS, or Android, you know, whatever it may be. And basically, if something changes, they simply make a click and all of those services are turned off. That's the power, and what we think is really being enabled here. And you know, customers are really coming onto it, and it's coming on strong, right? They are saying that this is now becoming table stakes for how they need to manage different apps and services.
And so a side question before we start digging into the new identity manager. I don't want to go too far down this rabbit hole, but all three of you, Windows 10, we've been talking about, yes, it has all these modern new capabilities. I wrote a blog post a couple weeks ago that, you know, a lot of people have been saying, okay, just moving straight over to Windows 10 and keeping existing management processes in place will be relatively straightforward. So therefore, the big question is, when are you going to start managing Windows 10, I'm making air quotes, EMM style instead of classic Windows style? So I'm curious for your opinion, just because we haven't actually, you and I haven't had this conversation yet, and Noah and Ashish, I'm curious for your opinions, because like I want to know, is this going to happen soon, or is it going to be 5 years, or what?
Well, if Gabe doesn't answer, I'm going to take it.
I'm sorry. I had to step away. My children were out back in like behind my office yelling, and I had to go on mute and go tell them to go away because my wife was in the shower, and then they just run wild. So I'm sorry, I missed the lead into that.
I'll jump in, and then
I think Gabe will tap in. So I think the question was, when is Win 10 going to become reality? You know, like for that we're going to manage it in kind of an EMM style. And you know, right now, you know, I think what we're finding is that there is this promise of easier, simpler, faster, better, cheaper, right? That can I do more in a way that, you know, like do I start to eliminate the update and patching problems? Do I start to, you know, have more trust that application is deployed? Can a user use the device for both their personal and their corporate use? Is that just going to become a common paradigm across the board? And I think those are questions that IT is really excited about. And so they're entering into early proof of concepts right now to see, does the promise deliver? And we're seeing some really positive results. But I think, you know, Gabe, I think you'd be the first to tell us application migration is hard, right? The migration from XP to 7 was hard, even though it was supposed to be straightforward. And you know, we think, you know, at VMware, you know, obviously we don't want to underscore that this is, you know, this is an instant pop on to Windows 10 and the world's simple. But, you know, we think that there's tools, technologies, and that the, over the next decade, that this potentially is the right way to start to get to a more economical, an easier, more reliable, and also hopefully a better user experience in terms of managing.
And also, it's also occurring to me that that a lot of the future-like features, like the quicker, faster automatic updates, they're more EMM-like features that that can be taken advantage of, even if you're still also managing some classic Windows apps on the device in the traditional way. Is that correct?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think that we're going to see hybrids, right? We're going to see there's ways that, you know, for your home computer, that this is a way for you to remote into some of the services that you need in a very simple way and have, you know, the data contained and secured on that home computer, you know, with still giving the user a very simple personal home experience. And so that's where, you know, again, I think if I step back and think about it, you know, iOS, one of the benefits is that it's firmware, right? You don't really change the core root system every time. And that really drives security. It drives some level of stability, right? And also gives app developers a very clear construct for how not to disrupt the core operating system. And I think Microsoft, especially under Satya, really gets that, right? We've got to get closer to a firmware-type operating system from a security and management capability. And to do that, you have to build inherent hooks, and that's where EMM comes into play.
And I think that's the vector that we'll see the adoption of managing Windows and applications in a more EMM-like way is going to be through the end users, through users trying to work from home and things like that. Is everybody I talk to about deploying Windows 10 to corporate desktops is talking about doing it the exact same way they've been doing Windows desktops for the last 15 or 20 years, which is, you know, at this point, they're just going to bring it in and phase it in as they phase in new hardware. And they're going to continue to manage it in largely the same way, just because that's what they do, and that's the quickest way to get Windows 10 in. And so only after it gets in, I think, are they going to start to try to find ways to manage it. Because there's two completely separate camps of management and two different camps of use cases for Windows 10. And by and large, I think from my perspective is like, you know, the corporate IT desktop focused side of the house not a whole lot's going to change. We're just going to deploy it normally. But from your guys' side, from the EMM guys' side, yeah, I can definitely see some new potential with it. It's going to be slow. I don't think it's 10 years, but I don't think it's going to be immediate.
Yeah, and again, I think what we would say is even this year, try it. Right, try it. You'll have, if you have an EMM solution in, with AirWatch especially, give it a shot. Right, register a device, join the workplace, see what configs we can do, see how you can deploy policies, set up, some of these different configs, and see, how that fits into the existing processes. Right, I think that's the exciting part.
Mm-hmm.
So next question that I want to ask. So actually digging down into, VMware Identity Manager, and that's the correct name, right?
Correct. You got it.
Okay. So what I see here is this vision that I've been hearing about. I've been hearing about this for quite a while now. That okay, we all have our applications. We have some of them are web apps. Some of them might be native apps, depending on what platform they are. Some of them are remote Windows apps. And we want one portal where we can go and just click on the icon for those apps, and if it's a remote Windows app, then it starts that connection. Or if it's a web app, it launches us into the browser and does single sign-on. And if it's a native mobile app that we have on the device, we can go into that native mobile app and in theory, have some sort of hopefully one-click single sign-on experience, and that's one area where I know there's lots of interesting technology things going on for that particular technology. But this is essentially what, at least from the end user experience, this is essentially what VMware Identity Manager is, right?
Yeah, and again, I think I want to your first point. I think everybody on this call, your listeners, and Brian, Gabe, Jack, all of you would say this is a little bit of motherhood in apple pie, right? That we're saying, hey, deliver any app to any device, do it seamlessly, and I think the devil is in the details with these things, right? And I could argue that almost every customer I talk to says, absolutely, that's where I want to go. How do I get there? And I think calls like this, where we continue to evolve the technology to make this possible, and now seeing the hooks from the operating system, from the application vendors, built-in Kerberos brokering directly on these platforms, makes this a reality. And that's why I think, sometimes I feel that we've been talking about this vision for such a long time, but the point is that now we can deliver, right? We're getting closer and closer all the time, and that's what we're excited about.
That's what I also wanted to ask you. I wanted to step back in time and history. I'm thinking back to, I think it was 2010 when Brian first found a presentation online somewhere about VMware Project Origami. And then it was announced at VMworld that fall as Project Horizon, and many of the much of the vision and many of the concepts around Project Origami and Horizon 5 years ago seem obviously it's a very similar vision, but also at the same time, obviously there have been many underlying changes. There was no mobile app management then. AirWatch was a separate company then. There were, I'm sure, evolving single sign-on standards, stuff that exists now that doesn't exist then, and stuff that existed then that I'm sure we thought was going to be the future and never turned out to be to be anything. So I guess walk me through. What was there in 2010 and sort of how the vision has evolved? Because we also had the first, there were some Horizon App Manager releases in early 2013, I think it was. What I went through is I went through our VMware Horizon tag on brianmadden.com and looked at some of the different milestones over the last few years as this has evolved.
You know what's fun about it is when you think about it, you know, what we're saying is the vision is not necessarily dissimilar from any other technology vendor, right? That you want to really make sure that you get users the right apps, the right services across devices, and do it in a way that's secure, right? And you know, you could argue that that's Google's mantra, right? Put it all into the web and give you all these services through the cloud, right? That's where, you know, and you could argue that, you know, Citrix, Microsoft, others, you know, have been really focused on this idea, as well as us, in terms of how we deliver apps and data in a secure and managed way. And what I think we want to do is gives ourselves credit for what we are achieving, right? This notion of the operating systems starting to become a little bit more abstracted from the application stack itself, right? That identity is now truly a hook into native mobile apps and how app developers are building applications themselves, right? This idea of app stores, right? I mean, thinking back to that, Jack, the Apple App Store was a fairly novel concept, even with cloud computing, right? If you go rewind all the way back there, and so there's really a very positive momentum that I think we're seeing that almost every customer will say that mobile, cloud, you know, this ability of streamlined device management, deployment of services, self-service, you know, security and containerization are all still common lexicons that we're you know, advancing that technology every day. And I think, go ahead.
And also not to mention like widespread acceptance that, yeah, mobile devices are like real and actually important to the enterprise, because of course, like a few years ago, we were dealing with some people just still having the complete like disbelief, like, oh, we don't have to pay attention to that at all.
I think there's probably still a lot of companies that are doing that. I mean, look, there's a lot of companies that know that they are a force in their IT, but still aren't doing anything about it. You know, that they're just content because they haven't been bit by anything, or they don't have any real needs besides email, and they think they have email covered with Exchange, ActiveSync, and stuff, that they just choose to ignore everything else. And I mean, I'm sure that's slowly changing, but man, it's really surprising how many companies are doing nothing.
But then just like how it gradually happens, no matter what, almost like we use Box now at TechTarget, and like that just sort of happened. So
it happened though, because they had groups like ours that were going around and using Dropbox. We had they had data that had escaped their walls that they couldn't keep track of, and so they finally relented, and now we use Box.
But Gabe, that's happening everywhere, right?
I know.
You know, that's the reality, is that if you even want to get, you know, millennials in the door, right? Like, are you going to say, hey, you know, everything's on an SMB share on a corporate lockdown PC? You know, that's going to be tough for somebody that's just coming out of school to say, this is how I work, right? It's not how they think anymore.
No, it used to be that IT, the end users weren't savvy at all, and the IT people could just say, this is how you do work here. And they had no choice. The employees just had to say, okay, that's how I'll do this. And now the inmates are running the asylum now.
So let's talk. Okay, so because part of this conversation today, I also wanted to dig into the nuts and bolts of single sign-on, both for web apps and for mobile apps, because we were just talking right before the call that this is complex stuff, and I'll give a little bit of background. As single sign-on and identity and access management has come into the mobile device and mobile app management conversation in a huge way, that's become a part of my world in covering EMM. And you know, for our Briforum conference next week, which there's still time to register for Briforum, I might add, there was, you know, we ended up of after we picked all the sessions, I realized, like, hey, we don't really have anything about this topic on Briforum. So I volunteered to do a 15-minute lightning round session on this. And because I actually realized that talking to Brian and Gabe over the last few days, I asked both of them, what would you want to know about identity and access management in 15 minutes? And so Brian said, yeah, like, I get the concepts. I get how having SSO makes everything more secure because we don't have to worry about users losing a million different passwords, and it just makes it more convenient. But his question, like, does all of this actually work? Because in our consumer lives, our experiences, I know Brian and I am, and I'm assuming you are too, Gabe, like, we're 1Password users because in our consumer lives, that just makes it that much easier to have password filling. And in my consumer life, I have a bunch of apps on my iPhone that I've logged in with my Facebook account instead of creating an individual account. And that's fantastic.
But what a pain in the ass it is. Because, I'm a 1Password user. And can you for 1 second imagine your mother using this? Or does she have Buckeyes as her password for every single website?
Well, Buckeyes 1 and Buckeyes 2, right?
She has the post-it note underneath the keyboard.
My very first password ever was Honeywell, because that was the brand of keyboard I had, and it said Honeywell in the upper right corner.
I'm going to try that, Gabe.
I haven't used it in 15 years. Go ahead. But
well, Ashish, maybe you know, I know you've been in the identity space forever. You know, how are you seeing the needs change?
Yeah, so I think the way you talked about, I think the eventual vision, which is come to a place to access all the application, that hasn't changed. But there has continued to be an evolution of devices and capabilities and applications and so forth. So, which is why I think as we continue, we have to kind of keep up to date. To answer your questions about 1Password, the reason why it kind of works in the consumer world is because there is no liability challenges. And if you think about it, even though you address the convenience part of the end user, you haven't really done anything to do with the security. So if your password is Buckeye1, you haven't changed it. And if I happen to hack into your application 1 or happen to try Honeywell on application 1, I can try all of your 50 accounts, which I think you may have an account for. So 1Password handles the consumer side and the convenience side. It does nothing to handle the security and management and control and access type, which is why it has been harder on the enterprise side.
I was going to say, unless we also so these days when I do have to set a new password for a website, it's 1Password generates the 16-digit password or whatever, and I don't even have to know it or remember it. So that solves the issues with using the same or similar passwords with a bunch of different websites.
Let me ask you something, Jack. Is your Netflix password a 1Password password?
Yes.
It is? Okay. Because it just occurred to me today, mine is 2, but I had to sign in. I left when I was on vacation, I left myself signed into Netflix in Ohio. And so the only way you can't turn off individual devices, you have to go to the website and sign yourself out of all devices. And so now I've got to have the app up on my phone and, cut and paste it or type it into my Apple TV, every Apple TV I have in the house. And so it's a real pain in the neck. And so I can see a situation here where people have stupidly simple passwords for some of these services, like Netflix and Hulu and things like that, that they need to enter in, say, with a remote control instead of a keyboard. And that breaks the whole system.
With the Apple TV remote.
Yeah, but that breaks everything, because there you go, Noah. There you've got one easy password for Netflix, and that can, you can engineer your way into all sorts of other things.
Yeah, and from the identity industry perspective, I think our last 10 years have not been how to make your password secure or how to manage your passwords. Our 10 years, has been invested in how to make passwords obsolete, which is a very different goal, right? So what we want to get to a point is that, and Facebook Connect, and she mentioned it, is actually the step in the right direction. Now, it does bring other challenges, which is I can correlate data, I can have privacy challenges and all that. But from a model perspective, where we want to get to is your accounts and your password do not have to be managed and stored and cached by each of the independent places that you go to, and you have a central place. And that's not to say you have a central place to manage the passwords. It's to say that you have a central place which can federate and pass the appropriate information into a way that even if you hack into it, even if you hack into a SAML token, you get nothing out of it. So from an industry and protocol perspective, that's where we want to get to.
Yeah, and I'm assuming in the Facebook example, I'm assuming that's using OAuth tokens, correct?
Yep, that's right.
And but I'm thinking like those consumer apps, like when I use Facebook to sign into Lyft or whatever on my phone, like those consumer apps, I guess, have consumer market pressures to make sure that that's like super easy. But do all of my, but of course, like on the enterprise side, it's much more complex. And so I'm wondering, like, the state, not only is it all complex, but also they may not be selling their product on whether or not the user can log in with one click of a button, just like in 1 second. So with SaaS ISVs, I guess the question is, obviously having good federation be in place is much more of a challenge because it's less complicated and there's like I said, at times less of a desire for that easy consumer experience. So we have this experience like where like some services support SAML and some support other things, and some are still just like filling web forms. I guess what my question is then, and this was also Brian's original question, like obviously the idea of having like single sign-on to all of my work services sounds great, but like with different standards and some things still, it's just filling in forms and don't actually do real federation. Like, is it possible to make it all work in the like great way, or do we just concentrate on like the big apps that we use every day, like make sure that your Salesforce and Office 365 and everything can be supported in a good way?
Right. So I think I'll answer it in two parts. First, and I want to expand that in the enterprise use case, it's not just about single sign-on. I think that's the first step, but we need to talk about also, you know, provisioning and deprovisioning and access control and all that. But before I get there, in terms of how hard and how tough it is from the enterprise perspective, so if you look into the enterprise space and, you know, there are about 200 applications that today support SAML, right, in the ISV space. And we have a list of all the vendors. So that, I would expect, would cover 80% of the applications that you need. Going forward, and one of the challenges when, you know, we done adopting SAML was, you know, maybe it's too complex because the platforms have evolved from being the Java and SOAP and .NET framework into, you know, PHP and Ruby and Scala and so forth. So since then, we have updated this spec to call OpenID Connect. And now you would see that, you know, Microsoft, Google, Salesforce, and VMware, we all support it. So going forward, barrier to entry would be less.
Right. So you mentioned so OpenID Connect, and you mentioned like a handful. I guess how many ISVs support that today?
So OpenID Connect was just, you know, ratified, I want to say, 6 months ago as an IETF standard. So we are not there yet for the ISV's adoption. My point is today you have 200 ISVs adopting SAML. So majority of your use cases and your top enterprise apps, actually more than your top enterprise apps, you can do single sign-on today using SAML.
So also another, so when when an identity and access management vendor says that we have integration with 1,000 ISVs or 2,000 ISVs or 4,000 ISVs, so 200 of those are SAML. I guess what do they mean when they're talking about the rest of them?
Right. So in generally, when you talk about single sign-on and the integration, I can bucket them into three high-level categories. One of them is the SAML one that we talked about, which is the kind of most secure and most standard-based. The second category is where we call kind of custom integrations. And what that means is that, you know, if you have an SAP system, you know, and SAP had a suite of applications, then over a period of time, they built their own token mechanisms. If you have, you know, in the late 90s, there were classic IEM vendors like SiteMinder, Oblix, RSA, Clear, Trust, and so forth. They have their own token format. So the second category is when you develop the integration kits specific to that platform.
Sorry to interrupt. Is it possible? By listening to this podcast today, we're all learning a lot of great new things about identity and access management. Which this is perfect because this is exactly what I wanted. But my question was going to be those vendor specific token systems like SAP or CA SiteMinder or whatever are those also all available for third-party identity and access management platforms like VMware, for example, to be able to support and now you can act as the identity provider for those customers that have all of those SAP systems or applications that use those other various ones that you mentioned?
Right, that's right. So all the APIs, so in case of SAP, it's my SAP SSO2 cookie. In case of SiteMinder, it's SM Session cookie. In case of Oracle Access Manager, it's OBSSO cookie. And all the APIs, both to create and consume that format, are available. So we can act both as the IDP as well as the SP. So if you have deployed, an example, SiteMinder, and you know, you're happy with it, but you want to extend the same experience to Salesforce and Workday, then by putting in an IDP like this, you can consume that token, convert that to a SAML token, and then suddenly you just, you know, enabled a brand new world by leveraging or extending on top of your SiteMinder deployments.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That's cool. Yeah. And so you said there's a third category then.
The third category is the password management and form filling. And within that, there are two major deployments, how people do. Is a proxy-based deployment, and then there is the kind of form-filling, a browser extension-based deployment, so, you know, like the way the 1Password works. And we have seen that. So whenever you see any vendor which says, I have more than 200 applications, this is essentially password management is kind of 2,200 of those.
Right, right. And so this is all for now. We're talking on... we're talking on the desktop browser side, but then of course it also gets a lot more complicated when we go on the native app side. So what are we talking? We're talking new standards, because we can't do going back to the 1Password example and not that we're picking on 1Password or anything. This is like any consumer. Consumer password management. Like Gabe was saying, it's either you're cutting and pasting from the one from your password manager app into your other app, or you use the browser that comes with the password manager app. Except then that means that you're using like the mobile the web version of a mobile app, and like why do that when I have a native app on my device? And also, like a lot of websites, when they see this random, XYZ password manager browser, it's like they freak out and don't. It's like not one of their regular recognized browsers. And so there's those difficulties on the one hand, but then on the other hand, like I never have to give it a second thought about how logging into consumer apps with Facebook works because I just know that it works. And also consumer software providers, like they're also they're incentivized to go get Facebook's identity SDK or like the sign in with Google SDK and make it work because like they want to make it as easy as possible for me because I'm a consumer.
You right. Actually,
go ahead.
I think you hit on something really important, Jack. That I think that was where identity actually started to really become and parcel to EMM, right? That it's just almost unacceptable to say if there's a Box native app or a Salesforce native app or all these great native apps that are now coming that are built for touch, right? Why should I have to go into Safari browser or the Chrome browser, to get those experiences, how can I leverage the native app?
Yeah.
And that was what we were really excited about with what we did next.
Because like I've seen various workspace products over the years, and it's like, yeah, we do SSO on desktop, we do SSO on mobile, and then there's like the little asterisks. It's like SSO onto mobile web apps, and it's that did not match with my expectations at all.
So I think that's the area, and you asked kind of earlier in the show what's changed in the last 5 years. I think that's where we have invested the most. And I think that's where, not just from a product perspective, but also from an industry perspective, like, why don't we get the same experience when I launch a Workday app, a Workday native app on my mobile device, or a Salesforce native app? So if you look into the industry, if you ask me the short answer, what's available today, you know, historically, the identity industry and the mobility industry has kind of stayed in parallel, and they never intersected. I never met you ever before, right? This kind of gives you an idea that I've been to every identity conference in the past decade and have never met you, which kind of tells you why these paths never intersected. And this whole mobile cloud era and the access of native applications kind of made us merge, which is why you see the startup vendors coming into place and the big vendors coming into place. In terms of the kind of double-clicking on what's available today, you know, there are different vendors have chosen different ways to solve it. There is app wrapping and SDK philosophy. There is the password form filling philosophy. There is a JavaScript kind of a hacking, which, you know, if you look into iOS 9 Trusted Link or Windows 10 have something called TB-Auth, which is kind of next generation from that perspective. Where we think that the EMM and the identity can come together in this space is that, like I said, our goal is not to manage passwords. Our goal is to make them obsolete. What we have been able to do, and hopefully you were able to see that demo from Nova during our launch event, is that when you enroll a device, we are able to put a cert, and we then leverage the iOS CURB facilities or the Android at Work cert management to essentially use that as an authentication method to an IDP, which can then use it to convert to SAML and OAuth for wherever you want to go. So from the end user perspective, the experience would be, you know, awesome, and a lot of magic happens behind the scene.
Right. So and so you mentioned two steps there. So first there's authenticating the user to the IDP, to the identity provider, and so you mentioned doing that by if a device is enrolled in MDM, either iOS or Android for Work, as you mentioned, then you can use that MDM to put a cert on that device, and then that's a known device. And I'm assuming, though, on a mobile device, if that mobile user wanted to be authenticated to the identity provider by other means, like say it was an unmanaged device, or they're doing something else with like codes for two-factor authentication, or there could be that mobile user could have other methods of authenticating to the identity provider. Would that be correct?
Absolutely. And so the way, if you think about it, right, we always talk about user devices and applications, and it's the policies which binds them together. So from a user, if I'm trying to access, for instance, let's just say I'm trying to access a Salesforce web app, and I'm trying to access a Salesforce web app from a managed device, and I'm trying to access a Salesforce web app from a desktop, so, right? So if I'm coming from a managed device, I can still leverage, even if it is not a native app, I can still leverage the EMM part of it and give you a seamless SSO experience. However, if you are coming to Salesforce from a device that is not managed, from a network which is outside the corporate domain,
then you'll have to authenticate in some other way.
Then I can prompt you for a secure ID. So we can have policies which are based on device type, which is iOS, Android, right? Based on the management, yes and no, and based on the network, and honestly, based on the app type. So I can even say web apps, I'm okay, but for native apps on untrusted device, I want a different auth method.
Right, and so this is one side of the equation, and also this is obviously where integration between EMM and the identity provider come into play, because the identity provider and the EMM can talk to each other and say that, okay, this policy has to be in place on this device, and so that's really cool. And this is also, I'm assuming, this is what's new with the newer version of the new VMware Identity Manager, that it's AirWatch, it's EMM policy aware, as opposed to that's one of the new features now, correct?
That's correct. And kind of to top of that one, whatever work we are doing, either from the identity side or from the EMM side, it is still standard. So we want the experience to get better and more secure. So it doesn't prevent any other IDP to hook into it and for a different set of use cases, because all the work we want to do is kind of push the standard in a way that more people can adopt it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I like, Jack, that you were bringing up the use cases of both managed and unmanaged, right? We think those are incredibly important, right? And we there's a lot of work that we do to support both, because we obviously think there's use cases around both.
Yeah. You know that's one of my soapboxes.
I do.
So this is great. So we're talking. So that's one side, from user authenticating to the identity provider. So then the other side, then, of course, going from identity provider to service provider. And we talked on the desktop side, we talked about how there's SAML, and that seems to be, there's the 200 ISVs that supports that, and that seems to be, relatively speaking, seems to be relatively straightforward. And then if there's not SAML, there could be some custom integrations, or there could be just password management and form filling. So that's on the desktop side, going from identity provider to service provider. But on the mobile side, going from identity provider to service provider, I mean, tell me what's going on there, because I've heard there are different ways that SAML and OAuth can both be involved and used together, or newer standards like NAPS, or there are probably some other things that I'm forgetting right now. So give me the state of how far along we are there on the mobile side.
Okay, fair enough. So the way it works is that today, you know, majority of the 200 SaaS ISVs that I talk about which support SAML, whenever they have, you know, 80% of them now have a native mobile application. The handshake, and, you know, this is slightly hard to explain without a diagram and a whiteboard, but I'll do my best. Since you mentioned NAPS, I'm the author of the NAPS spec, so I've been very heavily involved in how the native application can leverage the investment done on the back end for SAML. So the handshake today is the native application, you know, wants to make an API call to the back end server. You know, SAML was, you know, kind of meant or primarily used for browser single sign-on, but not for kind of API access. So OAuth is being used, native app, to the back end server. The backend server then does the SAML SSO with the IDP. So today, if you download a Workday or a Box or a Salesforce, your experience would be that you click on the Box app, you will see an embedded web view. The embedded web view will redirect you to an IDP, go ahead.
And this is where, so like this is where when you download the Box app, there's it's like sign in with your account, or there's a button to press, like, it asks, like, are you an SSO user or something like that, and then does something a little bit differently. So this is
right.
This sign on, then it's initiated in the service provider's application.
It is. Now, service provider, the very first step they have to do is what we call IDP discovery. So in case of Box, you may actually be a home user that you just signed up, and Box doesn't have any way to find it out. So what Box does is it basically says, you know, are you kind of a corporate user? And then you enter your email address. When you enter your email address, Box can then map that to a tenant. and figure out that for that tenant, who is your IDP, and then redirect you to that XAML IDP.
Right, whether that IDP is VMware or Azure Active Directory, or your company just has ADFS set up.
Yep, you got it. Yeah. So that happens within the embedded web view, and this is where you are leveraging the investment that you have made for XAML integration for your desktop type scenario that you mentioned earlier.
Right. So is there more to it then? more steps? I don't want to skip past any more steps.
What happens is that so as a user, you click on it, you told them the email address, IDP discovery happens, Box backend redirects you to the IDP, the user authenticated the IDP, and that authentication can happen either, either by strong auth or password or form filling. And then eventually, the IDP sends a XAML assertion back to the SP backend. SP backend takes the assertion, parses it, gets the user information, and then issue its own OAuth access token back to the native mobile application. And the native mobile app can now use this access token and a refresh token from OAuth for every subsequent API call back to the Box backend server. So that's the end-to-end flow.
Did you get that flow down, Gabe?
Done.
Chasing your kids again, because I think it's simple. Just a couple clicks.
Jack, I'll give your session now, buddy. Don't worry about it.
But I think this gets to that point, right? Where this is not easy stuff, and ultimately the user gets this great experience, and obviously Ashish talks about these flows that we have to be thinking about all of these different use cases and flows and how to leverage standards and how to leverage with the current investments, because last thing we want to hear is just yet another new spec, right? That's gonna require work on the developer.
Yeah, and the question is. Also for my typical like a lot of times at BrianMadden.com, the audience that we write with in mind is the people that have been responsible for desktops and desktop virtualization, getting the applications to end users type people in an IT organization. So if they're thinking all this single sign-on sounds great, and hey, now a few of the services that we use have mobile applications. What's going to be my barrier for entry for providing this on mobile devices? And it sounds like with this example that we were just talking about, of course, if the like generally we can assume that. If a service provider like already has this XAML integration, then generally we can assume that it'll just sort of work this way on their mobile apps as well.
The service provider, if they write a mobile app, they still need to do the OAuth AS setup on their backend, and most service providers today have taken that route.
Yeah, you said like about 80% or so earlier of that 200. XAML number.
I said those are the ones who have their mobile apps. Majority of the integrations that I have involved with, they all support OAuth. But my 80% number was how many people now of those 200 have native mobile apps.
Right. So two other questions. Wow, we're like 6 minutes towards the end of the hour. So I have two other questions I wanted to get into, and then I guess some other wrap up. But of course, since this is not the real radio and this is a podcast, we can always go over if we have to. So I guess the most important question to get to is like this example of a service provider that did enable that that web view in their app to sign on that way. Like that's great. How many headaches am I going to have from like all of the other apps that are out there? Or I guess also that question, the important part of that question too, is also how many enterprise mobile apps are are your users actually asking is the first question. And then the second question is, how much of a headache is it going to be for all of those?
So let me, you know, this is the thing that I would say is in practical customer conversations, right? That when we go in and you talk about that 200, it doesn't sound like a large number, but it really is, right? When you talk to a customer that is using the handful of apps, almost always the vast majority of the apps that they're using or working with are on that list, right? That they're going to get a strong federation, and if their mobile app doesn't already, they're probably quickly working on making sure that federation does work. And that's where I think what we've tried to do with VMware, with the Identity Manager, and with AirWatch combined is say, let's start with what you have, right? Let's take a list, take a look at what apps you have, and guaranteed we make, you know, the world a lot simpler for, you know, 80-90% of the use cases that they're trying to do. And where there's edges, you know, that's where we try to really rely on standards to go back to those ISVs and say, hey, we have a mutual customer. You know, they're trying to deploy your app. We want to make it great for the end user. Here's some open standards ways we could do this and start that conversation. And she says this all the time.
Or also if it's, you know, like I'm thinking, okay, so like if it really truly is 80 or 90%, and I guess this is then like the interesting question to ask any customer of any identity provider, like how many of your apps were able to work smoothly, and those cases where it didn't work, like what happened there? Because I'm imagining, and Gabe, I'm sure you have like an opinion on this. Like I imagine, like, okay, 80% of my big name brand enterprise SaaS apps, like you get the single sign-on worked out for all of that in theory without too much trouble, because these are all like my big name brand SaaS apps that, you know, my users may be using like a lot, all, you know, Salesforce, Office 365, Box, whatever. Then that seems like a pretty good like return of like productivity and enablement for like the investment of going out and saying, hey, we're going to get some identity and access management.
It's huge. And just even internally at VMware, how many do we have, Ashish?
So I think that the total number we have is 240 or something within internally VMware.
And one of the things that when we talked to our CIO, you know, just as a reference point, there were about 19 different people that we were able to use in other parts of the business that were no longer handling password reset questions, right? And even that dramatic, you know, security footprint is really changed, right? Where if we have, I think in my current list, I think I have something like 30 or 40 apps that I get into regularly. And, you know, just trying to, if I had to manage the passwords for that, it would be a nightmare, right? And so I'd start using really basic Honeywell.
Right. Or like all of us on the phone, we can figure out how to make our password manager work. But like Gabe was saying, like any of our, you know, any of our parents or.
Right.
Yeah. Or our employees. I mean, we can't expect. It would be great, but we can't expect the employees to know how to keep all this stuff straight. And frankly, you know, you look at a certain company that I'm very familiar with, you know, we have separate, so TechTarget uses Salesforce, but we don't have anything federated between us. We have separate passwords for Salesforce. And if we forget it or something and we can't go through the web interface to reset that thing, we have to call the designated Salesforce.com admin for TechTarget to reset this thing. And I mean, the last real job I had at a company where I was part of the IT department, there was one of those people for every single platform. And this was 10 years ago. There were silos within the data center that were not part of the machine, you know, part of the same identity or sharing the same identity. So even within that, there were still individual like business owner admins for the access to those systems. And that just seems crazy. So I love this idea. And I hope that more and more people are going to it, but I would not be surprised if there's a lot of companies that are just stuck doing it that way from a preserving my job standpoint, or from a a deer in the headlights.
Well, also another question. So a company that I'm familiar with, which is our company. So we've talked a lot about how internal IT works here at TechTarget. So I think if that's something that we were worried about, we crossed that line. When did we start doing these podcasts?
I don't know, a couple of years.
But so like our box now is set up using ADFS as the identity provider. But it's funny, every single identity and access management vendor, one of the first significant lines of their pitch is, and as you know, ADFS is a huge pain to set up because you have to set up 4 servers and it's complicated and difficult. And actually, maybe that's why a lot of people may think single sign-on, it's a pain.
Well, and they could be like me. So in that aforementioned last real job I had, I mean, I went into this company and they were all NetWare at the time. And they had, it was 2005, mind you. And they had an NT4 domain set up for their Windows servers, of which they had 6, NT4. Right? So yeah. My job, every user account was in NetWare, and they had no way of really managing all the PCs, like 2,000 PCs in the floor. So my job was to go in and roll out AD, and I needed to use NetWare Identity Manager, Novell Identity Manager, to get user accounts from NetWare into AD and then keep them in sync because, you know, that's a huge pain in the ass. And if that's your last taste of identity management, you're not going to want to do it. Because that sucked. And that was 10 years ago, but still, time flies and you feel like you just got done with this project yesterday. And that was a horrible, horrible project. So I feel like
we've tried to focus on is you gotta hide all of that, right? You've got to make it as secure, but make it super simple. You know, you just power something on. If you want it on premise, turn it on, log in and set it up. Or, you want to use a full cloud service to take care of it. You know, this is where we need to hide that complexity because you're exactly right. People get stalled at that difficulty.
So I became intimately familiar with LDAP. And that was not, I feel like it's got to be easier than that for widespread adoption.
And so I guess the question, and so I've been trying to keep this pretty much a general technology conversation all day. But I guess for VMware Identity Manager, for example, synchronizing my on-premises Active Directory, is it as horrible as Gabe's recollection of syncing, two directories?
I hope not. But in the mind, just to interject here, in the mind of somebody who's gone through that, and I'm not really speaking for myself, although I guess I would be if I still had that job. That it was a real pain in the neck on-prem. And now think about adding in or getting this tied into not just one cloud platform, but multiple cloud platforms. Say I've got some stuff in Azure and say I've got some stuff in Amazon and I'm also using Salesforce and Concur and all of these different things in Box. This to me seems like a huge pain in the neck.
Yes, I think this goes back to, for this session, given the time we had, we kind of primarily talked about SSO and the experience. We did not talk about the user account provisioning and syncing, which is what you just brought up, because, if you think about it, the source of truth, let's just say when you start this, is in AD, and when you want to use Salesforce or you want to use Box, you can do the runtime single sign-on, which is what we talked about. But before any of that can happen, you need to be able to provision an account into Box and Salesforce and into IDP and so forth. So that's a kind of a different chapter. I would say the way we have done it is we have invested a lot of time in making sure that we don't underestimate the provisioning aspect. And at the same time, given our customer base, which is kind of large enterprises, we deal with kind of multi-forest, multi-domain, with or without trust AD setups to take that, sync it, and then do the auto-provisioning into the target applications and so forth. So, uh,
That's our job, Gabe, is to make this easy.
Exactly.
I know. Well, that's just it. So, and I sound ferocious here, and I'm not really. Like, I'm sure that it's way easier today than it was in the past. But, yeah, it's just, I mean, it needs to be, you need to be able to demonstrate how easy it is in order to change people's minds. It's not unlike the problem that VDI users encountered when they first tried to use VDI. You know, when they first did it, they thought they could use their existing SAN. They thought they could, deploy desktops the same way they deployed servers, virtual servers. And they failed at that, and they got a bad taste in their mouth with VDI. And I feel like everybody has thought that doing single sign-on and some sort of provisioning, deprovisioning, identity management across the board is a great idea. But then once they try it, they realize, holy shit, this is a lot harder than I thought it was going to be. So, you know, like I said, as VDI has gotten easier, the adoption has gone higher. And I feel like as this stuff gets easier, I think that our adoption rates will increase too.
So what is the so to sync from my on-premises AD to, and here we're, again, product-specific, VMware Identity Manager, do you guys have a proprietary connector, or are there what standard ways of talking to Active Directory are there? Because I was reading on just connecting using Microsoft as an example, just connecting Active Directory to Azure Active Directory, they have like five different products to do that right now.
Right. So I think it's it is still behind the scene, because you are restricted by the LDAP interfaces, and at the same time the deployment of AD into an environment which have, it is a 10-year-old investment a company has made. So in this case there is a spec from Microsoft. It's called DirSync, but that again, it works in some scenarios, but it doesn't work in all the scenarios, which is why the AD sync to an Azure AD sync, and if you look into the comments and all that, why this is a big pain. So we have developed that component, which is the AD connect component, what we call, which essentially, you deploy that once, you sync the users, and we take care of, flattening across multiple domains, and, whether you can use UPN or SAM account name as your unique identifier. And from that point on, the identity manager will take care of provisioning to your target app. So Salesforce never have to deal with it. Workday never have to deal with it. And the IT admin deals with that once, and that's about it.
You make that connection from your AD to the IDP just once, and then all the other integration, and including service providers that support automatic account provisioning through iNode SAML can be used for automatic account provisioning. I know there are some other things.
There is a SCIM protocol. There is other applications which does proprietary-based provisioning. But the value comes in that Salesforce never have to know that this user is coming from an LDAP server from AD, right? You can have a cloud directory, but Salesforce and a Workday and Box never have to interact with them directly, because they interact with an IDP using a standard protocol, either SAML or SCIM.
Right, and all they're getting is, and of course they're not even getting a password, they're just getting an assertion or a token.
They never get a password.
So so this is great. So we've gone now almost like 10 minutes over our allotted time, but so thank you, Gabe and Noah and Ashish, for giving us the extra time. This is awesome. This is exactly the conversation that I wanted to be having, and I for sure this conversation could go on another hour, no problem.
Yep,
it can. I mean, I think we're scratching the surface here. I think the access control pieces, I think we are still important components as we look at enterprises starting to not just do the tactical things on mobile platforms, but really move mission critical business processes to these devices. And that's, a whole nother topic for another day. And I think I just want to thank you guys for, humoring us. And hopefully, again, a couple words that are important is standards driven, like Gabe and Jack and everybody, what we want you to hold us accountable to, right? We're working with the Googles and the others, the Apples, the Salesforces, the Boxes, to really say, how do we make sure we can do this and make this easy for the ecosystem? And also, just the end user experience. You know, ultimately, we want to make sure you get a demo so you can see, like, it's actually simpler than your consumer life. And that's rare that we can say that in technology. So we're pretty excited about it.
Yeah, thank you very Gabe, as looking at your experiences from 12 years ago to now, I guess I don't know if my question is like, are you sold or what?
I've always wanted it. So yeah. I mean, I'm sold. I've always been sold. I need
proof.
See?
You need some proof, right?
I want proof that it's a manageable thing that it should be like a one person role, and it should be like a half a person role or a third of a person role. You know, it shouldn't take one dedicated person to run this kind of stuff in this day and age.
And
I wonder if we have any YouTube videos out there that we can send to the team that show them how to, you set up and how you configure apps. Like, I think that's just some of the things that I think you should see, right? It's pretty neat.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, so with that, I'll wrap it up. So, Ashish in Palo Alto, thank you very much. And Noah in Atlanta, thank you very much. Gabe is in Omaha. Thank you very much as well. Thank you very much to Justin Meisinger, our engineer and producer, and also Mariah Lyons, our BrianMadden.com team captain. And most of all, thank you very much to everybody who has been listening for this hour and 12 minutes. I'm Jack Madden, and have a good afternoon.